And this is not going to be easy for us, okay? Now, I'm going to say it ahead of time because I know us. Now, I don't know visitors, so I don't know what visitors may be feeling. Because you're so good to open up, and so we talk so much about what's going on in our lives, what we're about to discuss is going to be hard for us to deal with. There will be no jokes about Peter. There will be no laughing at his question. There's going to be heartache in this discussion. There's going to be heartache, and there's no way around it. It's not going to be fun. But if we can just stay on track, stay on the road. Going to be lots of questions afterwards. You feel free to ask them. And because there'll be specific things and personal things you want to ask, we may not get to do it today in this, but that's why I'm going to stick around. There may be some things we need to address because it's going to affect some emotions in us. In Matthew chapter 18, the whole chapter is worth reading, but I want us to focus, because of time, we're going to look at starting in verse 15. He's going to address a situation that will not make you comfortable. He said, if your brother sins against you, stop. I sat in church way too long in my life just hearing this taught and not hearing what Jesus was teaching. Right? Is that possible? I heard the sermon outline. I heard the poem at the end of the lesson. I sang the song when we stood to sing, but I didn't hear this lesson. When a brother sins against you, what does that mean? How does that feel? We get caught up, church people get caught up in the church house rules of the process by which you discipline a brother. That's not what he's talking about. When a brother sins against you, what happens? You feel betrayed. Your heart is broken. Tell me another emotion. I'm sorry? You're confused. This is my brother. Why would my brother do this to me? Give me another one. Anger. Heard of it at the same time. Stereo or trio, verse 3, right? I'm telling you, we miss the pain in here. So I'm going to say it. In this room, there are people who've had brothers sin against them. There are also people in this room that have sinned against brothers. How's that feel? If you've been one of those that has sinned against, and I'm not talking about hurting feelings. I'm not talking about misunderstandings. I'm not talking about miscommunication. I'm not talking about perceptions. I'm not talking about all those things that keep us stirred up and keep our Facebook drama going. I'm talking about sin. How many of you have ever sinned against a brother? How's it feel? You know all those things you felt a minute ago? They're multiplied on the person that's guilty. There's anger there. There's hurt there. There's frustration, confusion. Why would I do that? If a brother sins against you, is a real deal. It's not theory. It's not theology. If a brother sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. Okay, now mark it down. Mark it down. And those of you who are church house pros, you need to break out of what you've been taught before. We're not talking about a process here of church discipline. We're talking about a brother broke your heart. A brother betrayed you. A brother sinned against you. Somebody did something to you that was sinful. What do you do? Now, time out. Honest. And you tell me the truth. What do we do? Write them off. What do? We go tell other people so they'll think as badly about him as I do. What do we do? Yeah, we hide that pain and don't deal with that sin, and we use alcohol or sex or some other obsession to so distract us and numb us that we don't have to deal with that. What else do we do? We retaliate. He did that to me. Watch what I'm going to do to him. What does Jesus say do? Now, all of those are natural. All of those are things that we've learned growing up. What does Jesus say do? I want you to read the exact words. Go and show him his fault. Go and show him his fault. What does that acknowledge? There's a fault. There's some problem here. Go and show him his fault. But now this next phrase you got to hang on to. Just between the two of you. And I say it so much and we laugh about it. And I know there are many good things that take place on Facebook. I am sick at heart from what I'm hearing and what I see. And I'm not talking about anybody else. I'm talking about us. How Facebook becomes a place where we air our brothers and our sisters' shortcomings. Shame on us. Shame on you. Shame on you. The only reason I don't say shame on us is because I don't have Facebook. So I'm finally, I don't have to take blame for something. You do this between you, between the two of you. Nobody else. Nobody else. Now, are there times that you may need to go to a teacher, you may need to go to a counselor, you may need to go to a confidant to say, could you help me out here? Tell me what I need to do. How would I do this? Yeah, but you make sure you pick somebody that is not going to turn around and tell everybody else. But go show it between the two of you. I didn't write it. He did. Now look at the next statement though. If he listens, what does it mean if he listens? He might not listen. So, but if he listens, what does that mean he listens? He acknowledges the fault. He acknowledges it's my fault. I did something wrong. Now hang on a second. There's so many layers to this and we may have to do part one, part two. Because honest, what we've done, I love you, but I hear it all the time in here. Somebody sins against you and you come and talk to me and I say you need to go talk to that person, and you know what the response is 9 times out of 4? Oh, it's no big deal. Or, he's not going to listen anyway. Won't change anything. So what are you doing? When you take that approach, what are you doing?
Disobeying God.
You're disobeying God, but you're playing God. You're predicting what that person's going to do. You don't know what that person's going to do. And you'll not get over it until you address it. You go and show him his fault just between the two of you. If he listens to you, now look at this. If he listens to you, means acknowledges his fault. If he listens to you, you have won your brother over. Now hang on. What's implied in that statement? It's coming. We're going to talk about it more. What's implied in that statement? If he listens and you've won him, what's implied? He repented and you forgive him. There's all kinds of benefits to it, but one of the costs of it is when you walk away and your brother has been won, guess what? Give me whatever phrase you want to use. Let it go. Drop it.
Peace.
Move on.
Peace.
Be at peace with it. But if he has listened, if he's acknowledged his fault and you've won him, guess what you don't do for the next 60 years of his life? You don't remind him of his fault because you've won the brother. When do you remind him of his fault? When he sinned. When he finally acknowledges the sin, when he listens. When he listens, what do you do? You've won it. You've won him. You won the argument. You won the battle. I remember me telling you about the guy who held against the church, would not go to church. I asked him why. It had been 20 years since he'd been at church. I was back when I was a new preacher. I moved into town. I went and visited everybody. And I asked this fellow, I said, I don't understand. You hadn't been in church in 20 years. Why? He said, well, brother so-and-so and I got in a fuss in a Bible class one time about something, hurt my feelings, and I'm just not going back. And I said, do you know that brother so-and-so is dead? Brother so-and-so had died about 5-10 years ago. He said, yeah, I know that. Hang on. If you stop going to church because you lost an argument to somebody and that person died, guess what? You won the argument. If you outlived him, you won. I couldn't believe it. But do we do it? Now, I'm going to say this, and we're going to hear this. You're going to hear me repeat it over and over again because I'm watching it. I'm watching it tear families apart. Wife, if you say to your husband you forgive him, get off of it. Husbands, if you say to your wife you forgive her, get off of it. If you spoke to them and they listened, you have won them. You have won. Leave it alone. Now, if you need to talk to a counselor, you bet. You need to talk to somebody that can share your burden, you bet. But you leave them alone. You don't keep bringing it back up. Why? Easiest way I know to say it, Jesus said so, and that settles it. Keep reading. What if he won't listen? That jerk. He sinned against me, and I went and talked to him, and he wouldn't listen. What do? Mark him off. Now, what do? Write him up. Nope. What do? It says we get one or two others. One or two others, we take them with us. Now, real quick, just real practical, who would you take? People that love him. People that he might trust. People for sure that you can trust, right? Now, you can, if you choose, take the biggest, hairiest guy you've got and scare him, whatever you want. But in the idea here to do what? And again, stop thinking. Now, I caught you. You're thinking church discipline. Forget that. This is personal. Personal. This is personal. The brother sinned against me. He didn't sin against the church. He sinned against me. He didn't sin in some major public fashion necessarily. He sinned against me. So I go to him alone. And if he doesn't listen, then I take one or two others with me. Look at that. So that every matter is established at the testimony of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to... Hang on. If he listens, what do I have? If he listens, what... Fill in the blank. If he listens... I've won a brother. I've won. I can leave it alone. I can move on. I can get over it. Keep going. But if he refuses to listen, that's when you tell the church. That's when you tell the church. That's when you make sure that the church knows this brother is in danger. This brother is in need of help. This brother's been entangled in sin and is going to go to hell if we don't rescue him. There's all kinds of things involved there. But here's... He said, you refuse, and if he refuses to listen to the church, you treat him like a pagan and a tax collector. I tell you the truth, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on the earth will be loosed in heaven. And again, I tell you, if you agree, if two of you agree on the earth about anything you ask for it, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three come together in my name, there I am with them. Now, I grew up going to church. And I remember the preacher standing up at the beginning of the meeting. He said, two or three gathered together in my name. There I am in the midst of them. And he used that verse, not incorrectly. He used that verse to say God was with us. Is God with us? But I promise you, he's with us whether there's two or three. Right? This verse is not talking about when we come together for worship. You know what this verse is talking about? When I go see that brother and he listens to me, guess what God does? He does, and basically what he's doing is he wants me to agree with him about that brother. Because if that brother listens and we've won him, what does God do for him? He forgives him. What does he do if two or three are visiting with him and he repents? Forgives him. So what should I do? Forgive him. It is the idea, folks, of standing there with the prodigal's father. You remember that story, Luke 15? That father's out looking for that boy. He's looking for him, wonders where he is, what he's done. He is not, he took so much money from me, I bet he's wasted every bit of it. He's not. He has no record of wrong on his list. He's looking for that boy because he cares about him. And he sees that pig pen smelling kid coming from a long way off. And what does he do? Runs to him. Now, I'm standing there and I spot him. I'm the brother and I spot him at the same time the father does. What comes up in me? That brother, that rascal, he's, you know, and he left me with all the work. I got a list of stuff against him. But I watched my father break into a run. My aging father, I watch him break into a run, and I watch him grab this boy up, kiss him, hug him, give him a robe, give him a ring, and have a fatted calf feast for him. What do I do? What should I do? I should run and be the second one to hug his neck. Because forgiveness is about agreeing with God. Underline it, circle it, remember it. Forgiveness is about agreeing with God. So I'm going to say this to you now. I'm going to say it to you now. Forgiveness is not about having a certain kind of feeling in your heart. Forgiveness is not about having some kind of emotional response to somebody. It's about agreeing with God about that person. It's about agreeing with God about that person. And if you ever so often, what you're going to have to do, you're going to have to check yourself. You're going to have to look at somebody that's hurt you. You're going to have to look at somebody that's betrayed you. You're going to have to look at somebody that's done wrong against you. And you said, I forgive you, but your heart hurts, your emotions are stirred, and you can't get over it. I understand. But that's why you turn around and you look at your father. You agree with your father because the father forgives him. What do I want to do? I want to forgive him. What if I can't get over the emotions? That's right. You just keep bringing that emotion back to Jesus. We've talked about it. You take captive that emotion, that thought. Does that mean that you haven't forgiven him? This is important. Does that mean that you haven't forgiven him? No. Here's what you're doing. Here's my list of things that you've done against me. Here's my list. And you got a longer list that you did to the Father. But the Father takes his list and tears it up, covers it, cancels it, blots it out, puts it away, is actually what the word forgives means. He puts it away. He puts it away. What do I do with my list? Put it away. Put it away. Now, is my heart going to remember it? Yeah. Am my memory still going to be there? I love you church people, but I tell you, you've worn yourself out, and rightfully so, because some of the preaching and teaching we've heard on this. Some of you have worn yourself out. We're supposed to forgive like God forgives, and when God forgives, He forgets. And I've forgiven that person, but I can't forget it. Are you really seriously kidding me? You really think you're going to blot out your own memory? You got to wait till you get my age for that to happen, right? It'll happen one day, and so you live for that moment. But serious, that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about you agree with God about that fella. Now, time out a second. What if it is a sin? What if it is a person that has not repented of their sin? You still agree with God. Now, I've heard teaching, and you have too, that says you just forgive. You're supposed to forgive because you can't be forgiven unless you forgive. I'm telling you, you can't forgive unless God's forgiven because God is the only one that can forgive. Right? And once God forgives, then you can say, God, I'm going to try and figure out how you did that. I'm going to agree with you about this fella. Or if God has not forgiven them, guess what? You don't have to. You can't. So what you do is, I'll let you handle that, God. Do I get to take vengeance? We know that. That's not right. Can't run over them in my pickup because it's not right. I can let God handle them, can't I? Can I even remind God now and again of what He's done? Yeah. It happens all the time in the Bible. Old Testament, New Testament, doesn't matter. It happens. Jesus does it with the hypocrites. Paul does it with a guy named Alexander. And I'm telling you, you can remember their sin to God, but you got to let God handle it. All right. That's when Peter said, That's when Peter said, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Now stop a second. Does that not make sense? And that's real honest. That's real honest with Peter. Because what would we do in Bible class? I guarantee we'd do it in Bible class. In fact, the last time I taught this in a Bible class that was not us, in my home, I had a group of people, visitors from another community that come about once a month, or came for a while, about once a month for a Bible study. We started covering forgiveness. And I made the statement that you agree with God, and that determines what you whether you forgive or don't forgive. And I thought some of these church folks were going to freak out because they started quoting verses about you're supposed to give like God forgives, and I was going, I agree. I got no problem with that. But if God hadn't forgiven, if God has not forgiven, I can't forgive. I'm not the one that forgives sins. Now, can I keep from taking vengeance on Him? Yes, I let God handle that judgment. I just agree with God, right? You know why Peter has trouble here? You know why we have trouble with this? Because what happens if we go talk to that brother and he repents? What happens if we sit down with him and he says, I'm telling you, I am sorry. I messed up. What if he... Now, here's the painful part, folks. What happens when you talk to him and he says, you're right, I messed up?
Sometimes we don't think he's received the punishment he deserves.
Dear Leon, he didn't receive the punishment he deserves. That's true. That's true. I didn't. Thank God I didn't. So Peter wants to know, Lord, how many times do I have to forgive my brother that sins against me? A real honest, personal question. Why does he want to know? And think it through. Why does he want to know? Maybe there's somebody he needs to forgive. Why does... Now, isn't that terrible? I'm so glad that we're not like that. I'm so glad that we're not like that with God. That when we're forgiven by something, we never do it again. You're going to sit there and listen to that. You know that's a lie, right? How many times have you prayed, God, forgive me. And God, if you'll forgive me this time, I won't ever do it again. And what'd you do? Before you finish the prayer, you just got started doing it again. And you ask him again. And so Peter wants to know, Lord, how many times have I got to forgive that boy? Because that just keeps coming up over and over again. How many times have I got to forgive him? Seven times? Now, folks, when you say seven times, you're a Hebrew fella, a Jewish fella, and you say seven times, that's a big deal. That's a God kind of number. So Peter was being very magnanimous. And you think about it, seven times? Think about how much, what it is to forgive somebody seven times. That's a big deal. And Jesus says, my old Bible said it this way, 70 times 7. What did he just say? If you're going to agree with God about somebody, you've got to forgive them like God forgives them. And how does God forgive them? 70 times 7. 77 times, whichever way your Bible reads. I wrote a letter to my mom years ago when I was a little boy, and I found it in her stuff after she passed away, and we were digging through all of her, cleaning out things. And there was a letter she had saved. I was in the first, second grade, and I'd written and said, I love you 17 times 7. That's a lot, y'all. That's a lot. 70 times 7, 77 times, 17 times 7. Let's just start with 7. How many times do I forgive the brother? I forgive him as often as God does. I agree with God about him. And then Jesus teaches this story. Jesus teaches this story. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 talents, millions of dollars, it says, was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children, all that it be sold, to repay the debt. The servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged. I will pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, and let him go. But then that servant went out and he found one of his fellow servants who owed him $100 or so. 100 denarii. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay me back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me, I will pay you back. Next phrase is important. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had that brother thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what was happening, they were greatly distressed, and they went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in and said, you wicked servant, I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? In anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. That's eternal punishment, y'all. This is how my Heavenly Father will treat you unless you forgive your brother from the heart. Two things I'm going to say, and then we're going to struggle with it for the rest of our lives to be like Jesus in the matter of forgiveness. We agree with God. Write it down. That's the key. The key to forgiveness is agree with God. But then when that happens, we've got to react like God. When somebody has a debt against us, or we have a debt against them, let me say that. When we have a debt against them, all right, we've got to react like God would react. And I think it's noticeable in this parable that twice he teaches it. It is honorable, it is realistic, it's reasonable to acknowledge that there's a debt. Jesus said, show the man a fault, show the guy the debt. Tell him, here's what you owe me. Do we have any Bible example anywhere where somebody who is ready to forgive somebody says out loud, what you did, you meant for evil? Do you remember? Joseph. In Genesis 50, he'll look at his brothers that he's willing to forgive and will treat them as brothers again in spite of how they've treated him. But he acknowledges, what you did to me, you did for evil. I've watched too many of us, when somebody does apologize to us, our first statement is, it's okay, it's okay, it's nothing, it's nothing, it's nothing. Uh-uh, no, 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 no. You can't have it both ways. You can't hold a grudge about somebody and then when they apologize, oh, it's nothing, it's no big deal. It was a big deal. And it's okay to acknowledge that it was a big deal. It's okay to show them that fault. Here's what you did, Rex. Here's how you hurt me. Here's what you did and what it resulted in. It is okay to do that when you forgive somebody. You acknowledge that there is a debt. But the second thing the king did, when the old boy listened, when he said, ah, please don't, and when he begged him, please, and I think he's lying through his teeth, he's not going to be able to pay all that debt. But when I lied to the Lord saying, oh, Lord, forgive me, and I promise I won't do it. Yeah, I've done the same thing. But I don't want judgment. I want forgiveness. I want life. I want joy. I want peace. I want my conscience cleared. Lord, please, don't let me die. Don't let me go to hell. Don't let me face what I deserve. Please, God. And God has pity on him. This king has pity on him. He'll use a word later, merciful. Has God been merciful to me? Think it through. Has God been merciful to me? Has God been merciful to you? So a second step to forgiveness would be not only acknowledge the debt, second one, is be merciful to the debtor. Be merciful. Be merciful. You want them to, you want to understand that God has forgiven you, that God has blessed you, that God has forgiven you. So maybe there's room for you to forgive someone else. Third thing. When you get ready to forgive, what does the king do? What is the phrase? What did he do? He canceled the debt. Now hang on, I gotta have you acknowledge this. When you cancel the debt, does that mean that there is no longer a debt? It's interesting, I wanna hear your answer. If you cancel the debt, does that mean that there's no longer a debt?
debt, no, the debt's still there, but if you forgive the debt, you choose to pay that person's debt yourself.
It's one of those yes-no questions. Those of you answered yes, that's correct. There is no debt as far as you're concerned. If you forgive me my debt, then I no longer have a debt to pay. But is there still a debt? Yes. That money's still gone. That old boy's bank account still registers. Millions of dollars gone. He still has the consequences of your sin in his life. Right? We've talked about it before. Are there consequences that follow us in our decisions to do evil? And even when we're forgiven, is there still a consequence? Yes. You think those brothers could take away what they did to Jacob? Joseph? Could they give him back those years he spent? No, they couldn't do any of that. But he canceled their debt. Were there still consequences? Yes. Point is, when you cancel the debt, what do? Say it again. I heard somebody say, you put it away. Put it away. Cancel it. Put it away. The reason Jesus taught this parable is to warn us. If we're not willing to do that, the Father will treat us the same way. There's the warning. It's not a threat, but it is a warning. So that means what I want to do is I want to learn to forgive. So here are two things I've learned. And we're going to discuss it after we remember that we've been forgiven. Number one, agree with God. In your situation, with whatever person's hurt you, with whatever person's sinned against you, with whatever person's betrayed you, agree with God. Second thing, in your relationship with that person, you react like God would. Agree with God and react like God. How would God react? Would He acknowledge that there's a debt? Yes, He would. Would He be merciful to those who are debtors? Yes. And when He chooses to forgive, and it's His choice, He cancels the debt. It means He puts it away. Does that mean there is no debt? No. But it means that I don't have the debt to pay. And in our case, Jesus paid it. Right? Thank God He paid it. He paid that debt. So what we're about to do, we're going to eat this bread. It's a little piece of bread you're going to take. It reminds us of His body. A body that was whipped, stripped, slapped, punched, poked, broken. His skin was torn. I mean, this body is hanging on a cross, and He was able to forgive. So does forgiveness cost you anything? Is there any pain involved in forgiveness? Somebody says, I can't forgive that person. It hurts too much. Yeah, it's supposed to. Because you're canceling the debt. You're doing what Jesus would do. Not easy. But if Jesus did it for me, maybe I can do it for them. But today, while we're doing this, we need to be thinking, He did this for me. Because that's what He says. We think about what He did for us. And when you drink that cup, when you have that fruit of the vine, you remember His blood. A blood that forgives sins, and not just forgives them when you obey Him. It keeps on forgiving you as you struggle with weakness, as you struggle with your own mistakes and failures. Let Him forgive you. And then if He's forgiven us, maybe, just maybe, we can become the kind of disciples, the kind of followers, the kind of people that will be able to forgive others.